Welcome to Le Bon Vie, a podcast offering from John Paul the Great Academy, where we talk about, celebrate, contemplate, and strive to live out that good life. I'm your host, Kyle Alberato. In today's episode, we have another back-to-school short, an excerpt from Stratford Caldecott's Beauty in the Word, Rethinking the Foundations of Education. So as a faculty, we read this together this past summer, and we discussed its key ideas as we returned back during our professional development. And so I hope to share excerpts that might help us really think about the foundations of the kind of education we offer here at John Paul the Great Academy. So in today's episode, we're going to hear from Caldecott a rethinking of really the glory of rhetoric. Rhetoric not as empty manipulation with words, but rhetoric in a higher sense. And so with that frame in mind, let's dive into the text. We reveal ourselves by what we say and do not say. In God, the knowing, thinking, and the speaking are one with the self-gift that is the nature of the divine. The perfect being is necessarily self-giving, self-communicating. The three persons of the Trinity are one God, one divine nature, perfectly given and shared, a community in love. Nothing else is necessary. Nothing needs to exist in the same sense or the same degree as the three divine persons. But the image of that perfect self-giving and self-receiving cannot be quite as perfect as its archetype. In anything created, the gift of knowing and of saying can be distinguished, even separated. And the freedom of God, which coincides with perfect necessity, is reflected in a freedom that is not necessary at all, and which requires at least a moment of deliberation and recollection. Heart speaks unto heart. This motto of the Blessed John Henry Newman, adopted from St. Francis de Sales, contains the essence of a philosophy of communication, which is also a philosophy of education. If education is about the communication of values, our meaningful information, and of wisdom, and of tradition, between persons and across generations, it is important to know that it can only take place in the heart, that is, in the center of the human person. A voice from the lungs is not enough to carry another along with the meaning of our words. The voice has to carry with it the warmth and living fire of the heart around which the lungs are wrapped. Images of the heart as a place of fire, of the life force, where the blood is warmed and energized, are found in all cultures and times. Human biology is more complex than this, but as simplifications go, it's not a bad one. Each culture has worked out a more detailed physiological symbolism, but this will serve for the moment. The physical heart is the expression of an idea. It corresponds to that in man which is both central and life-giving, or life-sustaining. This is the place where the breath comes from and where it withdraws to. The heart mediates between the senses of the head, sight, hearing, smell, taste, and the feelings and needs of the stomach and lower organs. As the center of the organism, it is the place of our potential union with God, and God is secretly present there, even for sinners. In Catholic devotion, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, crowned with flames, reminds us that God is a furnace of love in which all that is not compatible with love must eventually be consumed. As has been mentioned already, the Logos exists entirely as dialogue, dialogos. The word is spoken on the breath of God, Ruha, Spirit. God giving himself eternally, a perfect act of self-expression perfectly received and loved. Echoed in the creation, this means that real human communication is only possible in the context of love, without which the self can neither be given in an act of speech, we describe someone as not meaning a word of it, nor received in an act of sympathetic hearing. We accuse someone of not listening to what I was saying. In fact, every person has an interior life that cannot be divulged except by deliberately opening up the heart and allowing the life that is within it to flow through words and gestures into the other person. Human speech flows from within, but if it is to serve the truth, it cannot simply express what is within and nothing else. Thought is an attempt to know, that is, a marriage of the self with reality. While speech is an attempt to bring about a meeting of selves, a communication in that marriage, or a communion in that marriage. Human speech and thought need to correspond with the order of the cosmos, the order of love. It is a question not simply of ethics, but of ethos, a word which in Greek is equivalent to character. This topic belongs under the heading of rhetoric or speaking because in this section, I am discussing the dimension of education that concerns interpersonal communication, or the creation and sustaining of a community and a tradition. Here, what we are by our actions is the foundation of everything else. You cannot communicate a truth that has not changed you. You cannot build a community on a truth that has not been incorporated into you, making you the kind of person you are. The person is, to some extent, the message. It would be an understatement to say that modern thinkers are divided on the major questions of ethics, but this poses an important challenge to teachers and educators. It seems hardly possible to teach morality in the schoolroom if philosophers themselves cannot agree about the very foundations of ethics. How do we respond to the great confusion in this area today? I don't think we need to despair. Postmodernism and relativism have had their day, and the basic outlines of an adequate framework for moral reflection have begun to emerge, not least through the work of John Paul II. Ethics concerns what we should do or not do, and how we should behave. The new perspective developed by phenomenological realists and personalists in the 20th century placed the acting person at center stage, both in metaphysics, the study of what is, and in epistemology, the study of how and what we know. The same is, of course, necessarily true in ethics, which is a reflection on human action in terms of intention and judgment. The new perspective is embodied in John Paul II's encyclical Veritatis Splendor, which Livio Molina introduces in this way. Morality can no longer be understood as a simple list of principles directing our choices and helping us to come to correct moral judgments. It is necessary to grasp the meaning of action and the way it implicates the acting subject. Thus, the very object of morality, now conceived within a larger and more comprehensive horizon, is redefined. It is no longer a question of what should I do, as Kant had it, but rather of who am I called to be? Caldecott goes on to write, "What I am is decided by my actions. What I do with my body not only reveals but determines who I am. It creates my destiny. But this destiny is not entirely arbitrary, not completely up to me. It is not that I can be whatever I choose. I have only two choices. I can either be or fail to be what God has created and called me to be." In terms of education, this means that the best way to communicate morality is not through endless dry lists of what should and should not be done, but once again through the imagination, through stories, drama, and living examples capable of engaging the will and the emotions and thus inspiring us to be better people. A morality, an ethos, must be embodied. It must be lived by a human being before it can be understood or communicated. It is expressed in the virtues that are the powers by which we build character, and with the fruits of those virtues, which manifest the growing presence of the Holy Spirit in our lives. 12 fruits, to be precise, which we see demonstrated in the lives of the saints, and which could be called the criteria of sanctity. Peace, joy, love, faithfulness, gentleness, generosity, patience, kindness, goodness, modesty, self-control, and chastity. So I hope you were able to get something out of that excerpt from today as Caldicott tries to introduce us to another dimension of rhetoric involving, on the one hand, the ruha, the breath, the spirit, the voice of God, and on the other hand, to not just communicate a good message, but to be that good message. And so when we think of rhetoric in this sense of the ability to communicate a truth that has first converted us, let us seek as a community to speak well, to engage in this transcendent sense of rhetoric, to not only speak the truth, but to live the truth, which will inevitably lead us into living that good life. So until next time, vive la bonne vie.